Hi, this is Jean Bruce Scott.
And Randy Reinholz.
And when we're not busily producing some of the most outstanding Native American theater in Los Angeles,
we always like to check out the best of British audio adventures with Alex Lefchuk and his team of the Midweek Drive.
And Midweek Drive morning editions on Siren FM.
And southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com.
Sometimes in middle school, the best you can do is survive. Not my words, but the words of our latest ace author and a truly tremendous text called Jam Sessions, which is inspirational, positive. It's no coincidence that it was actually published on the day before the UK actually went into lockdown. That's March 23rd, 2020. We are delighted to welcome to the programme the awesome Jerry Harwood. How are you, Jerry?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. Jerry, you're based in Tennessee, which means you're right in the heart of what we now can possibly refer to as Biden-Harris land. Oh, no, probably I'm just preempting that. So who knows what could happen over the next few months. But good to connect with your good self as ever. And you've had an extraordinary diverse background. I mean, working in Rwanda as a volunteer, literally after the genocide, couple that with obviously stints spent as a college professor, as a middle school teacher, backpacking across Europe, teaching in a Ukrainian university. Was it just a case of you had this notion to actually go and seek out the craziest adventures over the years?
I think it's you choose your friends, you choose your life, right? So I've just had friends who have been doing those things, and I've accepted the invitation. My father gave me the advice years and years ago: travel when you're young. And so I made a commitment.
Just as well as you can't travel at all these days. So just as well.
That's right. Yeah. If I had waited until now, I'd be in trouble. Right. So that's exactly it. And so that was it. Like when people came to me and said, I'm going somewhere, I said, sure, I'll go with you. And thankful I did. Opened up a lot of opportunities for me.
Well, I was certainly sort of thinking at one stage, are we going to have a sort of Ernest Hemingway approach to life, etc.? I think it's fair to say Jam Sessions is the book Hemingway probably always wished he had written, but it is, as I said, a highly inspirational tale about a young man who, nothing to do with making strawberry or marmalade or any of those confectionery sort of aspects of jam, but presumably jam as referred to as in the jazz sense, of literally using jam to produce your own writing. You seem to have gone very quiet at this stage. In fact, we're completely frozen, Jerry.
Alex,
can you actually hear me?
I apologize.
Yeah, that's okay.
Our internet.
No, it's the joys of this whole new world. So yeah, so jam sessions. We're just talking about the background behind that. Before we start talking about obviously that lead character who's having a bit of a tough time really in his new school.
Certainly. So the main character is a middle school boy, so age 12, 13 years old. His mom moves him to a new school right at Valentine's Day. So kind of late year, right? Late year. And
the ideal time to move if you've lost all your friends, etc.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And so literally the opening area, he's a fly on the wall. He's gone into his new homeroom and they're having the party. And he doesn't know anybody, you know, so he's watching. And the book really turns on. He watches this one guy, Chuck, and he knows this kid's a bully. The problem is Chuck's also the first kid to come talk to him and the first kid to really extend a friendship to him.
I mean, that whole line that we see in terms of what is basically bullying and the line that comes through with Philip obviously having to be faced with school bullies, etc. Everybody can identify this. Everybody can resonate with this. I mean, is there any aspect of it which kind of comes across as autobiographical from your own experience?
You know, I've been asked that, and no, I teach middle school, so I see it quite often. I was very fortunate. I went home and told my dad the one time I got bullied, and told my dad, and he said to me I had to go join the football team. So I did. I went down the next day, and I joined football, and I never had another problem because I was in the group, right? So, but I have six kids. And so I saw one of my kids kind of go through some of these struggles. And then as a middle school teacher, I certainly see it every day.
I mean, certainly writing for a young audience. Is it fair to say jam sessions, or is it for everybody? I mean, initially I thought, is it a young adult novel? Is it a kind of humorous sort of look at life? Is it a kind of contemporary version of Schultz's Peanuts and Charlie Brown?
Right. Well, I certainly wrote it targeting kind of that middle school age. However, one of my careers was I was a program director at a counseling center. And so many of my patients would tell you that middle school were the years that were the hardest for them as they kind of look back in their life. So I think in that sense, an adult can read it and connect with it. And it's a story that, you know, we can find some redemption in if you had some of those struggles with anxiety, with bullying, with being in a new place. And so it targeted middle school, but certainly I've had some adults read it and go, that really helped me think about, you know, things I hadn't thought about in 40 years, which I hope it does. I hope it does.
So let's go on to actually talk about how that connection that's made with the teacher who effectively inspires and it allows our lead character to effectively develop and really grow within the jam session, within the writing. I mean, that certainly strikes a chord, I think, in terms of no matter how challenging one happens to be or happens to be experiencing things or what difficulties we're faced with, there's usually some kind of light and optimism that's actually there if you just actually engage with the magic.
That's right. That's right. And again, I, you know, sharing my own story, for me, it was a football coach. In this story, it's a teacher who gives a writing prompt at the beginning of the day, and he tells them there's no wrong answers, right? So he comes in, he says, you're a basketball. Tell me about it. You know, who's playing with you? Where are you? That kind of thing. And so he's giving these little writing prompts to students, and it's really the equivalent of kind of journaling is what we do as adults, you know. And I got the whole idea of the book, actually, because my wife gave me one of those adult coloring books, and I thought, you know, if adults can have coloring books, then kids can have journals. So what would that look like in a school setting? And this is actually something middle school teachers do sometimes. They give creative writing books. So they have kids just write stories in order to get them creative juices flowing and work on their English. And so, but this particular teacher cares and he interacts with the students. Yeah. So I think most of us, if we've gone through academia, have probably had one or two teachers like that were pivotal for us.
Sometimes people have even said that I've managed to have me a little bit inspiring myself, but that's by the by. It's all part and parcel of the whole thing, and I'm sure the same for yourself, Jerry. I've got to point out as well that when you talk about football, clearly we're talking about American football here and not British football. Yeah, otherwise, it would be soccer. I just want to clarify that because I can tell.
That's right.
Yeah, people say,
although, for the record, I played goalie in soccer too. So,
there we are. So, and it's a whole new world.
Through college and football, I ended in high school. So I love both sports.
Well, you see, combine the both of the whole side of things. And who knows whether David Beckham will ever get his Miami franchise going. It's a whole new world there. We won't talk about that. But changing the line slightly, I was fascinated to find that you sort of, emphasize, sort of remodeled a VW thing. Is that car maintenance? Is this Volkswagen? What is this remodeling of a VW thing?
Okay, so you know the VW bugs, the old bugs. So
like Herbie, the love bug.
Thing. That's right, Herbie the love bug. So the thing, and that's what it was called, the thing, was the Jeep. It was the Jeep version. And I say that because my son and I remodeled it and got it working. But we got it working about like Herbie the Love Bug worked. You know, you wouldn't want to take it across country, but you could certainly run it down to the lake or the gas station. So we got it up and moving.
Although I must admit, I think, you know, in terms of Herbie, it had a sort of sentience, you know, it kind of communicated with you. So maybe the VW thing was also trying to communicate in its own way. You know, it was the equivalent of a VW that was in middle school. It just wasn't sure where to go, really. You're inspiring it.
That's right. So
let's talk a little bit more about some of the other fantastic stuff that you produce, of course, because there's also pros and cons, P-R-O-S-E and cons, which is a wonderful line from that point of view. And of course, another one of my favorites, which is Crazy Buffet or Crazy Buffet, one of the two, but Crazy Buffet from that perspective. Is this, I mean, in terms of actually developing your writing styles and working through that, would you actually go back to that line we spoke about a few moments ago where you say, ultimately, if you're a writer, you should write. See what happens.
That's right. Absolutely. And I'm continued to do so. But I got into writing a couple of years ago, and I actually met a guy who was part of a writing group, and they met at an Asian restaurant called The Crazy Buffet. And so they put out an anthology called The Crazy Buffet. And that's how come I got involved with that. And it was a double entendre. They met there at the restaurant, but it was writers who wrote romance, sci-fi, fantasy, young adult. So you open it up and it really is kind of a little bit of everything. And so that's how I got involved with that. And I'm still with that group. And we keep each other accountable. We talk about word counts. We talk about what we're writing on. We encourage each other. We edit each other's stuff. So it's a great thing for I'm not a young man, but a young writer to have those people around me.
Age is just an illusion anyway, Jerry. We've got to keep saying that. It's just a complete illusion on that basis. What happened to the first two decades of the 21st century, I'd say. It's amazing. Just turn around. Who actually, from your own perspective, gets your creative juices flowing? I mean, it's a cliche to actually say who are your inspirations as a writer and so on, but when you've got time to actually kick back and put your feet up or relax, and you're not sort of dealing with six children, a grandchild, your wife, and VW things and so on, what sort of literature do you like? I mean, and who are the writers who effectively do it for you?
Well, I'm gonna admit something that I think most writers don't admit, and that is I love to go to the bookstore and I buy covers. And so if I see a great cover, I don't care the genre, I pick it up and I usually read it. So I kind of read across genres. I certainly, I'm a Southerner, so I like Southern American. I like John Grisham. Most Americans read things like Stephen King, but I actually just finished a romance book. I finished a Michael Sullivan book that's more kind of fantasy. So I really do try to read across genres. But really, if I see a cover that really catches my eye, I'll tend to jump on it, and then I'll tend to follow that author out after I get involved with their characters and things of that nature.
So you do judge a book by its cover.
I do. Yeah, we're not supposed to do that, are we?
Well, but
I do. And I love young adult books because of that. And I'm a middle school teacher. I watch kids come through every day, with the Harry Potter and the Percy Jackson. But they've also got new books that they're bringing in. And so I see those and I see a cover and I ask them about it. And then a lot of times I'm reading young adult books because that's what comes through my life.
In a world where clearly going to the bookstore is like a whole new experience now, mask up and everything else.
That's
on that
right.
Perspective, do you think that the growth of obviously these wonderful digital tablets and things is really becoming much more important? And from that point of view, we are in a world, and possibly as say you'll be finding this at school as well, in terms of your teaching scenarios, where actually the screen is becoming much more important in terms of that interactivity between a writer and his audience.
I mean, I certainly think so. That's why we're on a podcast, right? I mean,
absolutely.
And even more so in this world where we can't get out. You mentioned that my book published right as everything shut down, and I had some, face-to-face signings, and they're all on hold. These things can happen. And I also just think, my daughter went through school, and every one of her textbooks was on a computer. She didn't have a hardback. So I think you're raising a generation who are also more comfortable with it.
It is interesting, though. We've almost been kicked into this whole experience of having to deal with screens. And we've known that they were actually there. And clearly,
right,
as we've done with these interviews over the years, we would have normally done it as a phone line. I'd be in the studio. You'd be somewhere else on the phone, et cetera. We'd connect on that basis. It's delightful to actually see you on that line. But I was going to ask, obviously, from there, and given the whole experience which the whole world is being faced with, what's it like in Tennessee? I mean, we've got correspondents in North Carolina, in New York, in Los Angeles, in San Diego, and so on. What's the Tennessee take on this whole system? Is it a case of, well, our president knows what he's doing? Or is it something completely different?
So in our state, I say two things. One, Tennessee is a beautiful state, and it has just tons of forest and national parks and space. And so in some ways we're already socially distanced. We don't have like in London, we don't have a major subway system or, any kind of rail system. Everybody's in their own car going places. We have free parking because we have massive parking lots. And so in some ways we were already equipped. We're also
ahead of the game.
That's right. And parts of Tennessee are rural. And so we're also set up for that. I've been going to old movies, about every other week, but it's at a drive-in theater. So you pull your car in, you get out of your car, you watch it on a screen, you don't talk to anybody else, So, so in some ways, life here has been able to continue, but certainly in the city areas in Tennessee, it looks much more like it would in New York City or LA, where people are wearing masks or on lockdown and quarantine. And those kind of things. My friend circle I'm a volunteer fireman, so my friend circle tends to be people who are first responders, paramedics, emergency responders, things like that. So, the world hasn't stopped for them. People haven't stopped having heart attacks. They haven't stopped, getting sick. So a lot of my friends are still out and about doing things as essential employees too. So that'd be my second answer is, I think for many people, they've quarantined in and followed the directives. For a lot of my friends, that's just not possible. Sure. So we did for a few months, and then I'm a teacher and they've reopened schools. So we're back at it.
I mean, that's the excellent, of course, in terms of how that's coping in terms of school reopenings and so on, because even with the technology and all the other factors being there, it still can be a bit challenging to actually liaise and deal with the thing just through the screen. But maybe, it's just a matter of time before we're actually all wearing virtual suits and we're into a virtual reality world in which we have avatars and other such matters as well, from that perspective. Talking about virtual aspects.
What was the book, Ready Player One? Ready Player One that came out a few years ago. I thought that was pretty insightful, and maybe someday we'll be there.
Exactly. Now, speaking of which, and indeed the product placement that you get in Ready Player One, of course, I have to ask you, this love for Cherry Coke Zero that's only surpassed by your love for your wife, your six children and grandson. You're not a Pepsi man, obviously.
I am not. No, in fact, my father-in-law was a Coke salesman for his career. He's retired now, but
so you're indoctrinated, basically, Jerry. That's what you say. You're indoctrinated into the whole thing.
That's right. Yeah, you marry the girl, you gotta go with the family line, right?
Yeah, I mean, it must be interesting. There was possibly a narrative through a storyline there in terms of what would the relationship have been like if he'd actually admitted he always liked the Pepsi as opposed to Coke. Yeah. Could be crucial out of that. Secret recipes and all sorts of things. But so clearly not vanilla, not diet, just basically it's got to be Cherry Coke Zero.
Cherry Coke Zero. So, yes, when I was a younger guy, I was like 11 or 12 years old, I actually got into a sports accident and messed up my nose, and they went in and repaired it. And ever since, there's certain things I can't taste very good, but cherry I can always taste. So it's a personal thing. So, my wife will tell you, I love cherry pie. I love cherry Coke. That cherry flavoring, for whatever reason, I can always taste, and so I enjoy it more.
I mean, the classic line, of course, from Kyle MacLachlan's character, damn good cherry pie, from a series you may be too young to remember, but there we are. Clearly, it's opened up on that system. Now, in terms of, obviously, your website present, jerryharwood.com, you're available clearly on Facebook with Jerry Harwood 731 on facebook.com. All the socials are actually featured from that point of view. Just out of interest, as an author, as the creator of these texts, do you mind whether people actually, do you have a preference? Would you prefer them to actually say, have the physical book in hand? Or would you say, actually, I don't care as long as it's out there and I like to read through it? Because there are some filmmakers and directors who say, I make my movies to be seen on the big screen or in a drive-in and so on. What's your own sort of preference as a writer? Or is it just a case of as long as the message is out there?
I think I'm okay either way. I want you to read it where you're comfortable. I love the art in it. The art was actually done by one of my students. And so I asked him to collaborate with me. And so he's a high school kid now. He's a junior in high school.
Give him a name check.
Yeah, Miles Richardson. So he's on the thing. And Miles is just a wonderful young man. And so I want him to benefit as well, you know, if someone's reading it, to enjoy the piece that he brought to it. But I think most of your readers now offer that, your Kindles or your ebook readers. So that would probably be my only thing, is I wouldn't want you reading it somewhere where you didn't get that part of the experience.
No. Absolutely. And I say, and hats off to Miles as well. So some awesome illustrations, because that was one of the next questions I actually had in terms of who was the illustrator and where did the inspiration actually come from, that point of view. So excellent from that point of view. It's good to see it's working on that.
To answer your question personally, I'm always a paper guy. Like I always want a paper book. I realize that may not be
old school. Old school. This is it. We'll keep battling through. That's the important thing. Jerry, it's been astonishingly wonderful touching base with yourself. I think we've worked through a number of sort of key things there. A reminder, of course, Jam Sessions is available. Are you working on another follow-up as we speak? I mean, is there something else that you're sort of thinking? I mean, will there be a kind of follow-up to the leads in Jam Sessions, or is it a case of we'll just wait and see?
We'll wait and see there. I've got three others in the works. You know, as a new writer, I'm still learning. Like you finish a draft and then you wait on it and then you come back to it and then you send it out to beta readers and then you come back and do content edits. So I've got one that's at beta readers right now, but it's much more of a young adult dystopian. It's a longer book. And then I've got one that I finished the draft and I'm just kind of letting it sit and I'll come back to it in a month or two. As a teacher, I write in the summers and I edit in the school year. And so it is similar to Jam Sessions, but it's not the same characters.
I've just been actually sort of nudged in the notion of saying, you were talking about going to the movies, drive-in movies, etc. What was the last drive-in movie you went to go and see, and what are your favorite movies?
Well, the last drive-in movie we went to see was not my favorite, but it was Despicable Me and Minions. It was a double feature, but it was what was showing. I'm going to see Empire Strikes Back next week, so we'll be excited to see that one. That one's coming up.
No spoilers, but you might find there's some connection between Darth Vader and Luke. Just that's all I'm saying.
Right. Well, if you haven't seen it by now,
It's the AirTats. It's been, as I say, fantastic touching base with a good self. You can obviously be contacted via Facebook and all the other lines that we've mentioned. Jerry, we've got two critical final questions. I'm just actually stunned because I was going to say the backdrop, it's almost as though we're kind of via this Zoomer looking at you in a kind of coach's office in a school environment.
Okay. Well, you're in my classroom. That's from my time in Rwanda. So that was done for me by someone. So yeah, you're in my classroom. There's my metal knight that guards over my students.
Obviously the educational background, you could work through that, because we're so used to sort of connecting with authors either on a phone or in various other ways, and for the benefit of the listeners, obviously a Zoomer, and we're working through that. But I can confirm, yes, Jerry has actually sort of moved the camera around, and we are actually in his classroom, which is looking very well laid out, I have to say. So it looks like you've created a nice environment for learning and inspiration on that one there, so kudos on that side of things. It's excellent.
Well, thanks.
Two final questions for you. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today? Has it been okay for you?
Oh, yes. Very enjoyable. I appreciate you having me.
Well, the next critical question, because these are absolutely essential. Will you kindly return again? Will you come back and join us in the not too distant future?
Would love to. Would absolutely love to, Alex.
Excellent. Jerry Harwood, superb to talk to you. Keep on keeping on. And remember, of course, Jam Sessions is available now online. Go and get it. Be inspired.
Time for another Zoomer on the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbeam.com. Keeping the COVID-19 bugs at bay.
It is that time of the year when if you are a Native American, you can submit a play which could reach all manner of wonderful things, etc. Why am I talking about this on the Midweek Drive? Well, only because we've got the highly welcome return for the first ever Zoomer with the programme of the awesome Randy Reinholtz. How are you, Randy?
Hi, Hi.
Yay. And the even more fantastic Jean Bruce Scott. How are you, Jean?
Hi, Alex. I'm great. Thank you.
Delighted to hear you and see you, which is great stuff. It's the first time, actually, we've seen each other live, so to speak, since you were actually over in Britain, in fact.
That's true, since we had that wild ride with the Mad Hatter.
Well, you mentioned that, and I've just been saying to Randy that as you've actually not just had one, but two knee replacements this year, I mean, I know you take method acting seriously, Jean, but going for the bionic woman again, it's just, you know, just ease away. Anyway,
yes.
You're keeping well, I take it.
Very well. I would advise anybody who's waiting on this to do it. Don't wait.
Fantastic.
Such an incredible difference, and the pain is miraculously gone. The pain that I was having for 4 years is gone.
Well, let's see. 4 years of pain. Could that connect with the White House? It possibly could, actually. That might be gone as well soon.
That's true.
Let's just step away from that, because we're also delighted to welcome a regular contributor to the Midweek Drive course. It's Gemma Joy. How are you, Gemma?
Hi, I'm fine, thanks. I do apologise about the sirens. I might have to shut the window.
It's keeping it live. It's keeping it real. That's the important thing. Proving that, you know, even though we're having a transatlantic link here, that sirens can still go off. And obviously, you could say it's branding the station. So that's all good as well. You know, it's just marvellous. It has to be said, Jean, that Gemma was particularly impressed when I mentioned, of course, your background with Magnum PI and the awesome Airwolf, etc. So it's great to be able to finally put you together on that sort of basis, which is fantastic. In fact, I was looking at the recent Magnum PI, Jay Hernandez, of course, taking the Tom Selleck role. It's not the same without you, Jean, frankly. You know, we need you in there as a sort of military-based sort of system. And Randy as well is probably another sort of version of Higgins would be fine. We've got a female Higgins in the new category. So it's interesting stuff.
It's a wonderful new show. But it's an entirely different show. He's terrific and she's terrific. They're great fun together. So I applaud them.
Well, is the red Ferrari remains the same. And of course, it's now Magnum being a vet from Afghanistan as opposed to Vietnam. There we are. So one thing I often thought about America, and Randy, you can probably confirm with respect to this, how wonderful that America likes to have an invasion or a war every 20 years, just so it kind of refreshes the TV movies from that point of view, and indeed the characters of our legend.
Ever fresh.
I'm glad that we're on Zoom, because I can shake my finger. Yes. Why my finger?
This is very true, and this is why we appreciate you, Jude. It's excellent stuff there. We started off by saying about the exciting new release that's been there at the Autry, of course. It starts pretty much forthwith. Gene, talk us about this way in which, if you're a Native American or connected with that, you can submit a play which could well be performed.
Yes, of course. We are absolutely certain that there is a Chelsea Choctaw out there somewhere, living in the hinterland out in Wales or somewhere like that. And if you are an Indigenous playwright, especially from the Americas, please do send us your ideas, your plays. This can be anything in any phase of development. So obviously we'd like to read a draft of something, but don't be afraid if you've got it in your drawer and you're thinking, oh, it's not quite good enough to send it out, get it into us, get it in the pipeline, and we can let you know if it's not quite up to snuff. Maybe Katie Rich, our literary manager, can give you some pointers and you can submit again. We open the submissions right now. These close, they've extended the deadline, but these close for next year's events. But you can send your script in any time. And it's any theme. The Mohawks in Brooklyn writing about whatever they're doing in Brooklyn. We just want modern day contemporary stories are terrific.
Randy, if we can turn to your good self as obviously a Choctaw individual in full force. Great stuff from that for you. Question or thought with respect to the recent renaming, and I think some might say high time that the Washington Redskins effectively have dropped the Redskins. So Randy, thoughts on that, please. And you'll need to unmute yourself. I know, he's muted himself by accident. Now he's unmuted. He's fine. Exactly.
So happy that that capitalism and commercialism is coming around to this idea that they also could be socially responsible. And it doesn't have to hurt their brand. It doesn't have to hurt their bottom line or their revenue. I don't think anyone's purchasing or participating because of celebrating atrocities. I think what they're really participating is the spectacle, the fun of the game. And so it's not going to hurt the game if we forget the atrocities, and probably shouldn't forget them. Probably should remember them for exactly what they were and name them and then move on and stop committing them again.
Absolutely. Now, earlier, obviously, in this particular sequence, we were actually speaking to a writer in Tennessee in terms of mid-schools and various other factors. So we moved from Tennessee over to San Diego. I like to feel it's keeping the special relationship alive and thriving. That's the important thing. But Gemma is here for, obviously, another vital purpose, because she was with us on an earlier call and revealed that not only was she so annoyed after the Brexit vote that she decided to stand for Parliament and came very close to being elected as Liberal Democrat MP. Wow. It's nice to see one of my students actually goes into politics. Yay! But I think it's fair to say also, Gemma, you're pretty keen and enthusiastic about the Kamala Harris joint ticket. Isn't that the case, Gemma?
Yeah, and now look, I'm going to say I don't have a wealth of knowledge about Kamala Harris, but it looks like it's going to be a really encouraging appointment. I just wondered what the feelings seem to be in the news, in the media, from your neighbours, from people that, you know, closer to it. What are people saying about that?
I think they're pretty happy. Everyone wanted a female, hopefully someone of colour. That seemed to be the right thing, the right time, what's going on in our country or what's not been happening in our country for a long time. And she's particularly skilled. You know, the pool wasn't about gender and ethnicity. The pool was about talent. And there was so much talent there. And it seems like, you know, in this world of reality television show politicians, that somehow this personality and charisma is going to get anything done. And I think what it's done is absolutely stop things. We really have to move forward. We have to innovate. We have to come up with new ideas to some very old problems. So we need people that have a track record of making good decisions, of getting things done, of working across boundaries, working across barriers. She's a perfect candidate for that. So it's exciting that, and you know, I'm happy.
And Jean, I know you would be particularly astonished by the recent news that we received over here that Donald Trump feels nobody loves him. I don't know why. I just I don't know.
I think that's the best news ever. And I think you've baited me a bit there, Alex, because you know my proclivities. I think Kamala is going to be fantastic. This is a wonderful ticket. As Joe Biden has said, you know, he's the transition between generations, and to bring in this vibrant, vivacious, a wonderful, smart, whip smart woman to be his second in command is really exciting. Our group, of course, love it. We're getting some pushback from people, but the pushback is so woefully lame. In what they're talking about, it's not even bothering any of us.
The slight mini caveat is Gemma was feeling a little bit concerned because obviously, I say, given the sort of frustrations we've had over in Britain vis-a-vis Brexit, vis-a-vis the mini Trump we actually have in 10 Downing Street for at least probably 3.5-4 more years. I don't believe it either. Gemma, it's a case of slight anticipation from yourself, really, isn't that right?
Yeah, it's that thing where 10 years ago you would have looked at US and UK politics through the same lens of this is common sense and therefore this is the likely outcome. Although all of that's been turned on its head, and it shakes your sensibilities when you look at what's happening and the level of... it's pantomime. Do you have pantomimes? Yeah, you know what a pantomime is.
No, we used to have them here, Gemma, before coronavirus.
Production.
No, we know what they are. We don't have them here, but we know what they are, yeah.
Well, we have it in politics now. So we have, it's a very sort of comedic approach to politics. And you think that won't work, But hey, it does. And that's what worries me now. I just wonder where we're all going with this, and that the performance of a politician is worth more than their policies and their, you know, plans and, you know, to your point, Randy, getting things done.
Yes, I think you've also hit the nail on the head, though. It's the point of when it when something happens that is good or logical, those are, in this particular case, are by accident. But if you look at their actual policies and what they stand for and who they are, you start to understand how ridiculous they are, as in pantomime, and that they really cannot really, they can't stand for 3 more years or 4 more years, or, you know, we have to get the logical people back in there.
Well, Jean, as you're well aware, the only slight caveat I actually have with respect to the Biden-Harris ticket is personally I would have gone for Jean Bruscott and Randy Reinholtz as the ideal sort of team. And I can't understand why, you know, he weren't actually sort of sought out. I mean, as Washington said, he didn't want to be president, so he became president. It's a line from that point of view. There we are. Coronavirus, pandemic. The Autry has clearly had to close. So many places have had to close from that point of view, or close their doors. The pantomime season obviously is pretty much not existing. We're gradually moving live performances together. It's deeply saddened. I actually missed the Zuma technique they actually did, I think, in August, back in August, well, the start of August, August the 1st, et cetera, which focused on that. I mean, first of all, Randy, from your academic, wearing your academic hat as professor at San Diego, I mean, how's it been from your point of view in terms of that initially? Because I know at Lincoln, we had to move very rapidly from March 24th onwards to pretty much deliver everything online. And now we're talking about the wonderful blended learning, which is lectures online, but some small socially distanced students as well from that point of view. Randy, how's it going over there?
I think the chaos that is in the politics is represented across the board in American culture. So even people who are ambitious or wildly hopeful or refusing to look at the data, who want to get back together, just like what happened in Atlanta. So, you know, they tried to get the school kids back in there, and 1,000 people are quarantined now after a week. And it's just crazy. So what's going on at San Diego State? We announced a long time ago we would be virtual. And then labs, of course, labs are crucial for people to go in and feed the animals, as it were. And then studio art is difficult. And then that's where theater kind of starts to creep in. How do you teach dance for someone trying to dance in their bedroom across Zoom when they really need to, you know?
I'm not going to dance for you, Randy. I know it's our first Zoomer, but I'm not going to do it. Okay.
Okay. Well, there we go. I'll live in despair again. So that's what we're experimenting with, but the numbers just keep going up and going up. And so, you know, the New York Times op-ed that I saw right before we logged on was, we're going to pay for our vacations with partial shutdowns to complete lockdowns all winter, because, you know, the flu is going to come back. We really didn't do our bit to try to get it under control. Our industry is just shot. You know, there's no live theater happening until next summer. Someone's always announcing to get attention, oh, we'll produce, you know, and they're taking seats out of theaters. And there's a lot of almost theater about reopening theater, and none of it seems based in any sort of logic. I'm involved with a virtual reality, Midsummer Night's Dream, set in the future, recording everything, avatars some, and green screen, and some with live performances, capturing on phones and mailing. And so, you know, that's a piece of what we're doing in one of our classes. I'm going to have another Shakespeare that's just live on Zoom. So, I mean, we're going to do that kind of work. We're also trying to do a musical where everybody's coming in and being filmed, and it's 3D. I don't think we're going to be able to have a crew together to shoot it when it's all planned in October. So, you know, I think it's really, I feel like people should commit to this virtual world this academic year, dig into it, and learn everything they can. My students, I keep saying, everything changed. You're never going to go in for a cold reading audition again. You're going to give yourself tape. You know, just all these skills that are going to be required. They're tools the students need to acquire. So that's what I think we should focus on.
we may never be using the telephone again to reach you guys via her for a phoner. We have to change that completely around. But it's so much good to, it's so much better to actually see you, Gene. I mean, the industry, as Randy just says, changing so substantially. I mean, it's always been in a state of flux, shall we say. But what advice would you give a young actor who's starting out for a present, basically, who's actually having to cope with these kind of changing times?
I think I would advise all young, old, and in-between actors to demand that their representatives in politics mandate a 5-week, 6-week national shutdown and see if that can't bring us back to work again. Because obviously these piecemeal, we'll shut it down where we have flare-ups attitude is not working. And in the meantime, my dear actors all, you know, keep doing it on Zoom. Zoom it. Do it for your families. There's a wonderful website that's got stories for children that families can act out in their living rooms. I mean, there's all kinds of wonderful things that you can keep doing and keep your chops up and be ready.
We'll broadcast it on Siren Radio. I mean, at the end of the day, Randy and Gene, you actually open up many of the midweek drives in any case with your jingle you recorded for us back in the day. So it's all there. You know, it's classic scenarios. Gemma, questions from yourself for either Gene or Randy.
So you mentioned that obviously there has to be changes. What are the positives? Because it is horrific for your industry. I really feel for you. But what are the positives that have come out of this for you both, either personally or industry-wide?
Well, we've been Zooming since March 9th with people across the United States, Alaska, Hawaii. So I think that's a very good positive, or the reaching out. And then the number of people who have come together and formed committees and groups and action, affirmative action kind of things to say, let's get something done. We're very agile and adept community of artists. And what we do is we research things. And then we try to put the information out and get the stuff done. So I think that's been a big positive. Randy's got some better technical.
For Native American issues, it seems like Indigenous people are becoming visible around the world. Unfortunately, it's by being adversely affected by COVID and all the extreme high death rates in our communities. So there is an actual desire for Native stories and Native artists to share their experiences. And so that's been important. And Zoom has allowed for a lot of development. Sometimes when Native people are flavor of the month, their work is distributed long before it's had any kind of investment to develop it and make it better. So there are a lot of projects in Hollywood. It's a really interesting time. There are probably more Native-led projects in Hollywood this year than they have been in the last decade. And that happened in theater about 2 years ago. So it seems like there's a real desire for more voices. And instead of always trying to do what someone else just did well and trying to copy that, what's the next thing? And the next thing could be from people who've been disenfranchised for a long time and stories that have been kept down a long time. And that's what it's going to take for us to figure out global warming and water and the next set of issues that are in front of us.
It's certainly an interesting period in terms of just reducing one's carbon footprint, because the total mileage for myself since we went into lockdown, or rather the whole thing started on March 23rd, 24th, has been around about 200 miles. That's compared with normally about 5,000 miles I would have been traveling right between Middlesbrough and Teesside and so on. So again, I think we need to acknowledge some of those elements. Let's just progress it a little bit from that point of view, because Gemma is one of my students from the 20th century in many ways. Yes, I know, Gem, I'm sorry, but you know, it's there. I know.
It's so bad.
During your time in teaching preschool.
Nice one, Randy. There's ever the smooth operator there. No, exactly. Graduating from that point of view. And as we said, you've worked within the same company, pharmaceuticals, etc., 17 years. Then you were released, then you were hired back because they realized they couldn't work without you, which is fine. But share with Gene and Randy your tale, Gem, of how you felt so frustrated after the Brexit result that you decided to actually stand for Parliament.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'd always been aware of politics, and actually, funnily enough, in the 80s, there were two programmes that I enjoyed. One was Airwolf, and one was a show called Spitting Image, which is basically a lampooning show with rubber puppets, very much centred around politics. I'm pretty sure I got all of my political knowledge as a child from that programme, and it didn't stand me in any worse harm, but I wasn't really involved with politics until the referendum happened on leaving the EU in the UK, and I was quite complacent and thought, oh, we'll never leave, it's all a bit of a fuss. And on the day of the referendum result, when I realised that, you know, a slim majority had voted to leave, I was so bereft and outraged that I promptly joined the Liberal Democrats, who here are obviously campaigning to remain in the EU and continue to do so, and became very politically active, and then ended up standing for Parliament. Obviously did not succeed, but that has been a massive personal learning curve. So it's taken my life in a journey that I didn't ever think it would have. And if you'd have asked somebody at my school who was the least likely person to go into politics, it'd be me. But hey, I think there's a place for everybody, and you know, we need lots of different types in politics. So yeah, it's I'll continue to do so as long as they want me to, but it has been a massive learning curve, it really has.
And I just wonder whether Kamala Harris was actually inspired by Caitlin O'Shaughnessy's activities in Airwolf. I mean, I think it could actually tip the balance. I think she needs to actually admit at the end of the day, that's what inspired her, Jean, your performance as Caitlin O'Shaughnessy, to get out there dealing with Archangel and others.
It starts with one, Alex, right? So you can be that one. If you've got something that you want to talk about, to push forward, that you want to fight against, you be that one. It starts with one, and then you'll discover there are many others who think like you. And then you become the group, and then you become the slight margin that wins the case. So get out there and do it, whatever it is, whether it's politics or piloting. I can't tell you how many wonderful friends I have on Facebook who are female pilots who were inspired by Airwolf and by Don Belisario's willingness to put a woman in that seat.
Well, as I say, I think the remake just needs to be made with your good self as the kind of Archangel character in many ways. I think you could actually sort of feed in all manner of bits and pieces there. If they can do Magnum PI, they can certainly repackage Airwolf.
I'm walking with the cane now, so it works.
Exactly. It's all slots together. Got to say, Randy, you seem to have actually it's nip and tuck, but I think if I was actually going to make a selection in terms of most impressive Zoomer background, you might just win, Randy, because of the calendar on this particular instance. Would you like to just share with the listener what exactly is it? Because it's the first time I say first Zoomer we've actually done where we've had this sort of visible scenario there. Who have we actually got there in the backdrop?
This was the advertising for Off the Rails, the adaptation of Measure for Measure that we did at Oregon Shakespeare for a sold out audience. Over 25,000 people saw the show. On the one side with the American flag is a schoolhouse, and how the person from an indigenous culture would have been dressed and pushed to behave and conform. And on the other side is the wide open spaces and the traditional dress that this young woman would have had. And, you know, the conflict is she's a person walking in two worlds, and what's going to happen? Really, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting because a lot of times when people would see the show, they'd walk out and they say, well, that was sort of a Hollywood ending, because we all know the Indians are miserable and they had a horrible fate because it was a happy ending. And you think, well, we're here, we're live, and we're making a difference in culture and society now. So we're going to take what happened, we're going to learn from it, and we're going to make the world a better place because of it.
And first, say,
so
Jean,
what that is.
It's fantastic. I mean, and Jean's backdrop—it's like the wonderful sort of the armchair of power that we've actually got there. It's the armchair of power there. It's sort of the seat that sort of just will coordinate all sorts of things, like a sort of mistress of the wonderful stuff there. Gemma, I honestly didn't think you were mature. You'd been around to actually catch Airwolf in the 80s, but I suppose you would have been from that point of view. What was it about Airwolf that you particularly enjoyed?
it's the female pilot. It's the, so there was a lot of action based shows like Knight Rider, and obviously with all male protagonists, and to see a female pilot, there isn't really anything cooler other than Cagney and Lacey. That, you know, females doing, can I say badass?
You just have.
Yeah. And can I just draw your attention to my backdrop, which is my husband's room, and it's nothing to do with me, and it's our wedding anniversary today, and I'm horrified.
Aww.
I'd like to apologise.
Happy anniversary.
Exactly. Yes. Gemma, I hadn't realised that was your wedding. Well, indeed, happy anniversary, Gemma.
Oh, fantastic stuff. So we'll see how that goes.
It's that sort of a sense of anticipation that brings the drama to it. I could almost feel Andy, you writing another play just on that basis, really, of the wedding anniversary and the half open cupboard door. It's genius. You know, start on that basis. We could do it on Zoom. We could actually sort of develop on it and go on that sort of basis. I'm delighted we finally managed to connect with you, good souls, wise Zoom, because I know we've had a few sort of attempts to actually coordinate this over the last time, etc. I must admit, it brings a whole new flavour to our Midweek Drive package here, because it does mean you can actually see some of the other correspondents that are actually there. How have you found the whole Zoom experience, Gia?
Oh, I think it's wonderful, and I love watching Gemma. She's so animated and beautiful on camera as well. So this has been great fun. And of course, Alex, I just always love seeing your happy face.
Yeah, it's like Pagliacci's clone. I mean, who knows? If you could see the amount of admin work I'm having to work through these days and the migration, oh, Lord. But we're fine. If all else fails, I'll bring in my faithful friend Spike to actually coordinate. So he's still there. He still remembers, which is all good. And Randy, similarly from your own point of view, how have you found this brave new world, which, I'll be honest, I find Zoom far preferable to Skype. Skype. Do you remember that? So long ago. And indeed FaceTime and arguably possibly Microsoft Teams, although the university loves to get us on Microsoft Teams. Anyway, enough plugs for Zoom. I haven't got shares in the company. Randy, how have you found the whole thing?
I think it's a little bit more flexible than I would have thought. It's a platform that I've been working on for about 3 years. I serve on a lot of juries and panels nationally. It's a great way to bring people together. I find it becomes tedious after a certain amount of time. And as far as an aesthetic medium, I prefer to treat it as radio audio theater rather than a visual medium. I find it tedious pretty quickly visually. But if people are interesting about what they're saying, the intention of what's behind it, and then pay attention to all the other audio issues, I find it a very enjoyable medium.
Well, as I often said in my kind of Zoom netiquette, that I can always actually switch off the camera, stop the video from that point of view, and then just see the name, etc., or switch it on again. And I usually tend to work on the basis if people actually switch their cameras, I'll switch my camera on. But as I pointed out to several folk who sort of thought, oh, I can't do Zoom, I'm not ready. It's only radio, it's audio, the theatre of the mind. It's got some added sort of bonuses, like being in the sort of studio virtual space, etc., or as I refer to it, the Zoom room. But, you know, it's a different sort of aspect to consider and work through and celebrate that. Best web place to find out details for Native Voices at the Autry, please, Jean.
Oh, the web. Oh, just search for Native Voices at the Autry, and your Google will bring it right up, and it'll take you to the Native Voices page, and then nose around in there. You'll see our past productions. We're updating our ensemble site. I think we have 42 members now to put up their photos and their bios. And we have a new artistic director. We didn't talk much about that, but Randy is now emeritus along with myself. Wow. So we are in an advisory capacity these days, which is very nice. And Delana Studi has taken on the reins as the artistic director. And so you can find out about her there as well.
Well, I mean, clearly that knocks onto another sort of side of things, because we recently focused once again on the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra, and they just had a new replacement director, executive director of work there. He's done some fabulous work with us. We actually took the job just as COVID was breaking out, basically. So it's nice to see that the LA Chamber Orchestra have had to sort of adapt, as we all have to do in the arts. But I certainly feel that as though if the new artistic director would like to join us on the program, then the invite is there. I think we need to spread the word, really.
She's great fun. She's currently in Oklahoma with her family. She went back to take care of family through the crisis, the COVID crisis. Thought she was going to be there for a week or two, and it's now been 2 or 3 months. So I'm sure she would love an opportunity to Zoom to Lincoln.
Well, exactly. This is, I mean, Gemma and myself probably the sole people who can acknowledge Zoom as being either a song by the Fat Larry's Band or Fat Larry's Band, or indeed a 1960s ice lolly, but what the hey. And Gemma wasn't around in the 60s either, so let's just step away from that. But
I think you need to sing for us. You weren't going to dance, but you must sing.
I mean, after my rendition of I'd Do Anything For You, Dear Anything, I'd do anything for you, dear anything, for you mean everything, everything to me, in the kind of Jack Wild manner. It was given short shrift by Richard Fitzwilliams. I thought, well, that's another career sort of put together. But Gene, I appreciate you sort of at least acknowledging the scenario there. Fat Larry's Band and Zoom, I think I'll hold fire for that for the moment. You know, we might get a duet going with Randy. You know, he's a, you know, Zoom, My Heart, My Boom. We'll get there.
We'll work anyway. On it.
Randy, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today?
My first and hopefully not the last.
Well, this is absolutely critical. Gemma, has it been okay for yourself?
Oh, it's been more than okay. It's been an absolute pleasure.
On this, your wedding anniversary day, but it just shows, Jean, the power of Caitlin O'Shaughnessy. You know, St. Elsewhere obviously comes into that phase, etc. But, you know, obviously, when I mentioned the excitement, the emoticons that came through when Gemma actually saw that you were going to be on the Zoom call, it was very, very impressive. Very good. As we all are, very excited. So, Jean, has it been an okay Zoomer for yourself?
Fabulous Zoomer. I can't wait to get back and Zoom with you again.
Well, in which case, we will put that to rights fairly rapidly. Jean Bruce-Scott, Randy Reinholtz, and, of course, Gemma Joy, huge thanks indeed. Keep on keeping on, and bye for now.